Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm in San Francisco's Mission District to chat with Winnie co-founders Sarah and Ann. They have a unique background working at large tech companies like Google, Twitter, Quora, and Postmates before jumping off into their new venture. As someone who's built and admires community-driven businesses, it was a pleasure to dive into how Winnie is creating a community and a platform for parents. As mothers, Sarah and Ann exemplify founder market fit, and unlike me, are uniquely qualified to build a product for this audience. In other words, I don't have kids, at least not right now. On the podcast, we chat about the power of vertical communities, how Winnie combats fake parenting news, and lessons they've learned over the past 3 years building a startup while raising a family. But before I jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Fun fact, the gorgeous 1985 Ferrari Testarossa has appreciated upward of 400% over the past 10 years, outperforming the S&P 500, most real estate, and other traditional investments. The problem is, regular investors like myself don't have a few hundred thousand dollars laying around to buy and hold these rare and expensive assets. With this realization, New York-based Rally Road built an app, you may have seen it on Product Hunt last year, so that normal folks like myself can invest in high-value alternative assets like the Ferrari for as little as $50 per share. You can even get a fancy share certificate so you can show it off to your friends. All offerings are SEC registered, and all assets are museum quality and professionally maintained by the company for long-term appreciation. Members can participate in initial offerings as well as buy and sell shares in regular trading windows for each asset, very similar to the stock market. They're starting with classic cars, but look out for their launch of the second asset class in early 2019 as they work towards democratizing alternative asset investing. Check it out at joinrally.com/producthunt. Hey, everybody. This is Ryan Hoover. I'm at Winnie HQ in the Mission in San Francisco. I'm here with Ann and Sarah, the co-founders of Winnie. You both were at big companies. You both met at Postmates, if I'm not mistaken. Sarah, before that, you were at Twitter. And then Ann, you were at Quora. And then you decided to start a tiny startup from scratch. How'd that happen? And actually, maybe what is Winnie to start with?
Yeah, so Winnie is a platform for parents. We have an app on iPhone and Android and on the web at winnie.com. And we help parents find great family-friendly places to go with their kids, everything from daycare with open spaces to parks with playgrounds and restaurants that are kid-friendly. We also allow parents to ask and answer questions and get advice from our helpful community of parents.
So there's a little bit of some Quora experience, I guess, kind of played within that.
Yeah, for sure. Quite a bit of Quora DNA.
And actually, Ann and I were both at Google early on in our careers. We didn't know each other then, but there's definitely a lot of Google DNA, too, trying to get parents the information they need, you know, as quickly and easily as possible.
Yeah. So how did you come together and decide to start this?
So Ann and I were working together at Postmates, and I had just come back from maternity leave after having my first daughter, and I didn't take a long maternity leave. And when I got back, I sort of bombarded Ann with questions. She was really my first mom friend, the first person I worked with as a peer who was also a parent of young kids, and Ann had two kids. And I was asking her, you know, how do parents find childcare? How do they know what to do with their kids on the weekend? You know, how do I get answers to my breastfeeding questions? And she said, like, you know, you just kind of figure it out, or you talk to other parents, or, you know, you pick up the phone and call a daycare and find out if there's open spaces. And we sort of realized together that this was crazy, that it's, you know, at the time it was 2015, I guess. And there's all kinds of technology out there to help you in all other aspects of your life. But when it came to parenting, this information, you know, you have to get the old fashioned way. And we saw
phone books and phone calls, which is crazy.
Yeah. And making friends.
Yeah.
Which is very hard for me. We kind of realized, like, there's this trend where millennials now are becoming parents. And 90% of new parents are millennials. And we are used to getting our information online and having an app for that. And there was no app for that when it came to parenting. So we just thought there was a huge opportunity, and we had, you know, the skills necessary to build this thing. So we decided to do it.
Yeah. You know, I actually read an article from the New York Times today, and it was actually talking about the shift in age of when women have their first child. And I looked up San Francisco, and based on their data, if I'm not mistaken, it was 31 of 32 is the average age of having their first child versus the 80s. It was in the mid 20s. You know, it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah. So Anne and I are like teen moms for San Francisco in terms of when we had our first children. But yeah, we kind of felt like we're kind of seeing this trend before everyone's seeing it. And now I think 3 years later, there are more startups in the parenting space, which is great. Like there's room for thousands of companies in the space, hundreds of thousands of companies. And I think it's because, you know, we're on the slightly older end of the millennial spectrum and we had our kids slightly earlier than the average. So we kind of experienced this before I think a lot of people are about to.
Yeah. How did you have like the confidence to leave your job and then start this? What's the tipping point? Because you probably had the idea and it was probably, I'm assuming, noodling in your brain. And at what point do you say, let's do it?
Having children for me was the confidence to do it. Like,
yeah,
I really felt like if I wasn't spending time with my daughter, I want to do something that's really, really meaningful and work on something I'm super passionate about. And when I became a parent, that was making parents' lives easier. So the decision was easy because it was something I was passionate about and wanted to spend my time on. And my time was so much more precious to me as a parent. And I think that, you know, a lot of people say like, how could you start a company right after having a baby? Like, that's crazy. But for me, it was really the best time because it gave me the idea. Definitely not, would not have seen this opportunity and idea before having kids. And it really gave me the drive and the desire to work on something that was meaningful to me.
Yeah. There's like that concept of like founder market fit. And my assumption is probably be pretty hard to build what you're building if you weren't a parent. Am I mistaken? Or is that because you can empathize with who you're building for because you are that parent? Is that true or false? How would you describe it?
This may be controversial, but I would argue that it would even be hard to build this if you weren't a mom specifically. And I think that's because the labor of caregiving, even when both parents work, in most households is it kind of falls on the mom. And when I talk to people in our industry who are having kids, like the moms are always like, tell me about childcare. How did you find your nanny? Did you find a daycare? What did you do for preschool? And I like don't have these conversations with the dads. And I think they're leaving a lot of this planning and research and problem solving to the women in the household. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that and the gender bias involved. But I think that as moms, even though we were never, you know, the primary caregivers, we went back to work after we had our children, we did kind of have to do that stuff and we had to figure that stuff out. And I don't think that is true for all dads. So we kind of came into it armed with this knowledge that there was a problem here that was maybe disproportionately affecting women. So the way that the tech industry skews male made it even more the case that like we were really the only people that were noticing this, that there is this huge underserved market that like their needs can very easily be served by a technology solution. And like it just wasn't there.
The other thing I think we are seeing now in our data is like Winnie is 25% male. We have a lot of dads using Winnie, which is very rare for a parenting product. And I think that there's a couple of factors at play. One is that millennial dads, and we've done a lot of surveys of them, are more involved and they want to be more involved. But the other factor is they're locked out of a lot of these traditional networks, like the mothers groups, or even just like networking with other moms. It's really hard for them. My husband is a stay-at-home dad and like he feels this firsthand. And so having information that they can actually access so they can take on a bigger role in parenting, so they can find the preschool and find the thing to do on the weekend is really important. Like we want to enable the dads so that they can take on an equal role.
Yeah. Right before recording, we were talking a little bit about micro communities or verticalized communities, and Winnie community is a big part of Winnie. And we've also seen over the past 2 or 3 years, also particularly when a demographic shift, a lot of like women focused communities, like whether it's YC Leap or Chairman Mom, if I'm not mistaken, that's what it's called. And Girl Boss is launching something similar. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on or observations within like vertical communities, and like how do you think about building community at Winnie?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. Like, people want a space for parenting. It's a big part of people's identity, especially the millennial generation. But I think it's also important not to get too granular, because parenting changes. And as your kids grow, like, your needs as a parent change rather drastically. For example, like, I, you know, went through infertility to have my second daughter. And so my infertility group was super important to me. And then I had her, and, you know, they don't want anything to do with me, and I don't really need to talk to them anymore. And so what we found with building our own platform, and why it's so important for us to own the platform and the technology, is that it changes, and we need to be able to connect you with the right information and the right people depending on the stage that you're in. And so part of the beauty of Winnie is, like, you join, you tell us the age of your kids and where you live, and you don't need to friend people or figure out what groups to join or find the right, you know, niche network. Like, we will figure that out for you. We will put the content in front of you that is relevant, and that can change over time and will change over time. There's a balance you need to strike. I mean, we're not perfect and we haven't figured it out, but there's a balance between having a niche community, but not being too niche that it's only relevant for a very specific point in time, which I think is a trap that a lot of parenting products fell into in the past. And we may see a repeat of that with some of these newer groups that are forming.
Yeah, that's because they eventually churn. Inevitably, though, yeah. If you're, you know, serving a use case that's only for the first 2 years of childbirth,
it's really acute, and then it's not acute at all. You know, breastfeeding is the hardest thing in the world, and then it's really easy, or you don't do it anymore. And so, like, it's just, you need to make sure your product is relevant through the 18 plus years that you have kids in the house. And we want Winnie to be that, and we're going to use technology to make sure it is.
What's changed, actually, if when it comes to over the past 3 years building Winnie? You know, what's the biggest surprise, or what's changed in the product that's, like, been the biggest surprise or differentiator, or what have you learned over the past 3 years now?
So much.
Every day we learn something new.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I was surprised about, especially having come from Twitter, where there's a lot of spam and abuse and bad content, and I kind of got to see some of the worst of it, some of the stuff I worked on. But, you know, I expected, and we, our head of engineering is from Reddit, so we kind of built for the worst case. we just expected Winnie to be, like, overrun with, like, trolls and spammers and people stirring up drama. And a lot of these parenting groups are all drama. And so we built a ton of moderation tools from the very beginning. We kind of over-engineered it, which was probably overkill in the beginning, but now is starting to pay dividends. And we just also just don't see that much abuse. Parents really do genuinely want to help other parents. Like, I feel like there is something innate with parenting where you feel like you've been through something very tough. You've been through battle. You know, you figured out how to potty train your kid. And, like, if someone else comes along and they're struggling with it, like, you want to give them advice. You want to help them. You kind of can't help yourself but tell them some piece of advice. And so the nice thing about having this platform that brings that out is, like, we get all this content and data. We give people a place to give that advice. For the most part, they're pretty genuine. And then the, you know, very small percent of people that aren't, like, we've built systems to handle that.
I mean, I think, like, the Reddits and Facebooks and Twitters of the world, when you hear them talk about it, it sounds like controlling your community and preventing abuse is the hardest thing in the world. And we were totally prepared for that. And then what surprised us was actually with a few, you know, pieces in place, it wasn't that hard to, you know, curate the community, keep the content high quality, and keep it as a safe place for the people that are participating in it. And that is even with the ability to post anonymously, which is kind of like, you think if people can post without their real name that it will be overrun with trolls. But almost everyone on Winnie uses a pseudonym. Most people go by their first name only, and they can put whatever they want in there. We have no rules about using your real identity. And they also have the option to post completely anonymously without linking it to their profile. And I was half expecting that to be, like, you know, welcoming the trolls to our community. Yeah. Now that you can post anonymously, or at least people would be jerks and abuse that feature. And it absolutely wasn't a problem. And it's remarkable how even at the size that our community is now with over 1 million people, it's moderation is like the easiest thing that we do.
Yeah. That's tough when you have anonymous posting. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of a scary product decision, right? Because once you introduce that, it's probably hard to remove that feature. And so it's sort of put it out there. Hopefully people don't abuse it. Hopefully your systems like scale.
I mean, it's very important for this product. And one of the things that is important about compartmentalizing your parenting information and community is that sometimes parenting questions are like tough, real shit that you don't want to put on your Facebook profile where you can't help but use your real identity. You have no choice. And you may not feel comfortable even talking to your mother's group about some of the problems that you are having, or, you know, maybe a grief that you are experiencing. And so we felt really motivated to make it work from the beginning because we felt like it was a feature that made sense in this product and would make it much more useful to our community.
Yeah, that's a good example of why everything can't be a Facebook group or why everything can't be a Reddit subreddit. You know, a lot of people when we first launched Product Hunt, they were like, why isn't it just a subreddit? And, you know, I have a strong belief that you need to create a brand and a community and like a product experience like native to that type of audience or that type of experience. So that's a really good point why Facebook just can't necessarily like spin up, you know, a clone overnight.
I mean, we have other special features that are tailored to our audience, such as the ability to mask photos. So like we have these cute little stickers that are adorable, and there's a face detection feature that will put little animal masks over the faces of any children that are in the photos that you're posting. So if you're reviewing a playground and your kid happens to be in it, we make it super easy and even fun to anonymize that photo. And that's just like not a feature that Reddit would ever build, but it was something that we knew would make it easier for parents on our platform to share photos.
What does Winnie look like in 5 years? If you were to kind of fast forward or snap your fingers and you could have what you think you'll have in 5 years or what you're building towards. I don't know. How do you kind of envision it playing out?
I mean, we want to be a place that you come to for all your parenting needs. So not just local information like where to find a daycare, but any parenting question you may have over the 18 plus years of raising kids. And we have, you know, some of that content today, but that will only grow and be more useful as we grow. And also like where you come to make these big purchase decisions. Like we see a ton of commerce happening on Winnie, you know, from people finding the daycare they are going to attend and then actually attending that daycare to, you know, just they'll ask like, how do I get my kid to sleep through the night? And someone will recommend a sleep sack that they then go and buy. Now, we're not a part of any of that commerce today or most of it. But it's interesting, like how much sort of organic commerce is already happening on our platform. And parents spend $1 trillion annually on their kids in the US alone. So there's a lot of money being spent here. I think Winnie will start to capture a significant fraction of that. But really, we want to be a place that you come for all of your parenting needs. The sort of top of funnel, the Google search box for everything you might need over those 18 plus years you have kids in the house.
Yeah. Wow. There's so many different questions. So I'm not a father and I can just imagine all the questions that I would have. Like how do you put a kid to sleep? Like can you, they used to give kids alcohol, right? Can I do that? Is that a good sleep aid? I don't know. I think I need something like Winnie to save me from accidentally abusing my future
child. A
little
whiskey on the gums.
Yeah, whiskey on the gums. They used to do that, right? Is that a thing? Actually, have you seen what happens if someone recommends something that is clearly harmful or unethical?
So this is why we moderate all of our content. We have specific rules around stuff you just can't discuss on Winnie because it's too much drama, too controversial, and people are going to have very differing opinions. Like circumcision is a great example. Like that just always ends in drama. But we also do not allow like bad medical advice to be posted on Winnie. Like there is a notion of what is right and wrong when it comes
to... No fake news, no fake parenting news.
You can't go on Winnie and post anti-vaccine content.
Yeah.
Like we just don't allow it because it can lead to real world harm. We take a stand on things like this. Like there is a science-based answer to the best of our knowledge. Now, you know, our knowledge may change over time and medical recommendations for things like safe sleep practices can change over time, but there is an answer today of what pediatricians recommend and we go by that. And so when we see medical advice being posted on Winnie that is incorrect to the best of our knowledge, we remove that content. That's not allowed.
Yeah. Dangerous rabbit hole to allow complete free speech around some of that content, I imagine. Stay tuned for a mini interview with Phil, co-founder of Carbon, a GE Ventures portfolio company that's created the groundbreaking new method of 3D printing inspired by the Terminator. As we enter 2019, many of you may be reflecting on the past year, thinking about a new job. If so, take a look at AngelList, the largest marketplace for tech talent with over 26,000 companies actively recruiting. We've hired several people through AngelList on the product hunt team. And so if you're looking for a new change, take a look at angel.co/jobhunt. As you started Winnie and as you've gone from like a big company to now starting your own company, a lot of people here like listening to the podcast are future founders or want to be founders in the future. I don't know, what's the biggest advice or learnings you think from going like an established bigger company to now, you know, starting your own? Anything jump out to you as less known or surprising for you?
I mean, I think that nothing can prepare you for this experience besides just doing it. It is something you will learn on the job every single day you're doing it. And so no matter how ready you think you are, you aren't. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, because the best way to learn is to do it. I think it's also something you need to be prepared to spend a lot of time on. And if you want to change the world or make a big impact, you cannot do that overnight. And like, you should build your life and your company around sustainability, because the number one reason that early companies fail is the founders get burned out and give up. So do whatever you have to do, even at the very earliest stages, to build around your own ability to keep pursuing that vision so that you can get up every day and keep doing it for 3 years and 5 years and 7 years and 10 years, because that is how you change the world. It is a very long journey, and it is not something that you will be able to stick with if you're leading an unsustainable life.
Yeah. Anne and I were very explicit from the beginning that we wanted to build the most family-friendly startup. And so we decided, like, we are not going to work long hours. Our employees are not going to work long hours. They're not going to work on the weekends. Like, we are going to have a lot of things in place that give employees flexibility and the ability to take vacations and things that really matter to people in the long term, and enable them to work on this for a long time. And I think that has really paid off. Like, it's been huge for us in being able to do this for 3 years, and also for retaining employees, for recruiting employees. It's a huge competitive advantage to be family friendly.
Especially when you're here in San Francisco, where it's very competitive. Your former employers are, you know, looking for the same people perhaps that you're trying to hire as well.
Right.
Yeah. That's a really, so that topic of perseverance and sticking it through. I mean, I've at Product Hunt before, you know, first it was a side project, an experiment, and it was just tinkering. But at some point, you know, we had to make a decision. Is this a company, and are we raising money, and are we doing it? And for me, it was the benchmark was like, could I see myself doing it for a decade? And I just kind of threw up a random number, but that was like my litmus test. And I've seen this happen where people get excited about a new shiny object and they pursue it, and it's fine. Like, it's, there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes I think people lack maybe the introspection to like think through, is this something I really want to do for a decade? Because a decade's a long time.
I mean, the thing you need the most is a thick skin, for sure. And resilience, like a lot of resilience. I think that being able to stick with it is partially about sustainability, but it's also about being able to face the failures that are inevitable. When you're starting something new, like almost every other day, you're going to have something you thought was going to work and didn't. So it's like the ability to pick up from that experience and go like, I learned something, it didn't work, we're going to move on to the next thing now. And just like keep grinding and cranking on that cycle over and over and over again. Because like the output of that cycle is a lot of progress. But it's on this like very long-term kind of trajectory that you need to be able to see when you might be feeling really bad that one day when the metrics were down or the thing you tried didn't work. And being able to kind of step back and look at that bigger picture of like, that's where we're going. And I still believe in that and like refer to that every single day. It kind of helps keep you on that treadmill.
I feel like it's kind of like a sine wave for me. There's high highs, low lows. And I feel like my mood sometimes, for better or worse, is very, it aligns almost with where the metrics are going. When it's green, everything's great. I'm happy. When it's red, I'm not so happy. And I think that's part of the nature, I think, of, I don't know, wrapping yourself, your identity and everything into your startup, which I don't know, there's some good around that, but it's also a lot of negative, I think. Is people always compare a startup to like a baby? Is that a ridiculous comparison when it comes to like, you know, starting a company is very similar to like nurturing and growing and building a, raising a baby?
For me, like having real children has, I think, helped me a ton in putting the highs and lows of a startup in perspective, in that like, it's just not that serious. Like, yeah, so our metrics are down, like we'll pick them back up, it's going to be okay. It's just, I think it's helped me build that like resilience, because the lows aren't very low compared to the lows of my family. And like, you know, if a family member is sick or something goes wrong with my kids or my husband, like that is pretty catastrophic. And I feel like having been through some serious lows, like it's really helped me. I probably would be more panicked about some of these cycles that come with a startup, like, oh no, we're getting rejected by investors. Like what do we do? But because the stakes just don't seem that high, it's actually enabled me to, I think, persevere through what a lot of other people would have quit. And so like, and you know, I won't talk to for Anne, but like she also has two kids. And I just think like having real humans that depend on you, it just makes like the rest of the stuff kind of just like you're a little bit more chill about everything else, because no, it's not a human life. Like, no one, at the end of the day, no one is gonna die if we mess up.
And if you make sure you moderate those comments.
Yeah, like, do our best.
Like, yes. You know, it's just like, if Winnie doesn't succeed, I will be very disappointed, but no one is dead, versus if like my children don't succeed, that will be awful. And by don't succeed, I mean like if they were to get sick or something like that. We take our failures seriously, and like when there are things, experiments that don't go well, like we learn from them. But I think we're just not as depressed about it because we have like more serious things we're trying to deal with as well.
Yeah, I think that's true to my experience as well. Like I remember the days almost in this like disconnected sense. I remember the days when I just like obsessed about my job and my work and like feeling so bad if something I did wasn't successful or I got a bad review or something. And those days are so far behind me because I don't feel like anything that happens at work can outweigh like my family and my investment in my children and my sense of pride about them and them as my legacy. I hope Winnie outlives me. That would be great. So that
and
would
your
be
kids
like
maybe too.
That would be like an unprecedented success in technology. Yeah. That'd be awesome. But my children definitely will. And like they have a lifetime of contribution to this society ahead of them. And I take my responsibility very seriously to prepare them to be great people in the world. And like that, I feel like every parent does that. Every parent is building the future literally of our entire society. And so personally, in my family, I feel that responsibility with my own children. And then at work and Winnie, I feel like the big goal for me is helping other parents be less stressed out, be more successful, have the information they need, democratize that information. So it's not just like the top 5% who are even in the inclusive groups where you can get this information can be successful as parents, because the more successful parents are, the better our future will be, bar none. Like that is absolutely right. True.
We always try to like take a step back and like think about why we're doing this. It's like to make parents' lives easier. Like, and so are we helping accomplish that today? Like, yes. So we're good. It's a process.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like there's a bunch of companies that build tools and products and services to help startups succeed. Like AngelList is certainly within that. Like our fundamental belief is like, how do we help them, you know, succeed or, you know, recruit or fundraise or whatever. And you're kind of doing that, but for people, like people like raising their kids, which is kind of a similar type of dynamic in the sense that you're equipping them with things that will help them do a better job of raising the future and, you know, the next generation. So let's talk about some products that you love. Like what are there some products or apps that you love? Could be parenting related or not. Maybe something that you use on a daily basis or something that more people need to know about. Anything jump out?
I mean, probably a lot of people already know about this, but I'm like late to the game. I'm recently obsessed with 1 second every day, which is app where you can take a 1 second long video every day and it will compile it into like a little bit of a montage. The app itself is beautiful and so thoughtful on every level, but it's also an amazing product for parents because your kids' lives like flash before your eyes. It's amazing how fast they grow up, how fast things change. And I was starting to feel really stressed out, especially as a working mom, like, what am I missing? And like, I want to make sure I preserve these moments. So this app is absolutely perfect for me because it's like, you know, kind of a once a day thing to kind of just capture a moment of our life, our family life and our kids. And it's almost like a little visual diary and you can like literally see them growing up and it's really special. So
do you share it with your like family, like extended family? And is it something that you kind of use to like,
yeah, you know, like
show the progress?
I'll send like a month video to the grandmas and they love to see that. So they make really great like little, you can kind of export all sorts of different videos and video formats. And so they make very good shareable objects that you can send to friends and family.
Yeah. That's really cool. I hadn't thought about it from a parenting use case because kids, I have some friends with kids and I see them, the kids infrequently, once every 6 months. And every 6 months, they've doubled in size. It's just insane. It's like a Pokemon. They just keep growing and evolving.
Especially Anne's kids.
Yeah.
Anne's kids are really, really tall.
How old are they?
They're 4 and 5, but they are both off the charts.
I think they're taller than me.
Really?
The men in our family are very tall, and they seem to have inherited those genes. So I'll have little linebackers.
Yeah. Wow. What about you, Sarah? Any products that jump out
for
you?
Well, that made me think this is not a secret product. I'm sure everyone has heard of it, but I use the Google Photos app in a similar way in that my husband, who's a stay-at-home dad, has his like Google Photos library synced with me. So I see photos as he takes them.
Oh, cool.
Even if he doesn't choose to share them with me. I don't share with him, but he shares with me. So it's great because I see like what the kids do throughout the day, even, you know, without him realizing it or putting in any extra effort.
Does he take screenshots on his phone? Do you get random screenshots though too?
Sometimes, like every once in a while, I'll get something really weird. I forget there was something the other day. I was like, "What were you doing?"
Yeah, there's no context.
And he had some explanation for it. That's why I don't share with him. But
it would be all screenshots of bugs in the app,
or like weird selfies of me. But yeah, it's really great. That way, I can come in the door and like ask my daughter, like, oh, how was the playground today? And like, I don't miss a beat in what she was up to. So I kind of feel like I'm parenting.
Yeah, there's something interesting there around, I'm just like imagining, since families are so intimate and especially with your significant other, many times like there are no secrets and there's no boundaries. Well, maybe not no boundaries, but we're willing to share things like that. Your husband's willing to share things because he trusts you a lot. I wonder in the future, like, will we be as a family? Will there be ways to like sync our brains together even more so? Like, and is
the
that
other
a good thing?
App I use is Life 360. We have each other's location tracked at all times, so I can see when he leaves the house. I get a notification when he comes back home, and I can see like even when I zoom in, like, oh, he's a block away. That is also super useful, especially because he has my kids with him all day, like knowing where he is at any given time.
Is that helpful for like meeting up ad hoc, or is it just more just to kind of know where the family's at?
Yeah, like sometimes as I'm going home, like I'll check to see if he's home or at the playground. And if he's at the playground, I'll just like detour there instead of going straight home. Yeah, I don't know how people survived before they could just like track their spouses at all times.
Yeah. My girlfriend Susie lives in LA, so it's probably less useful when we're not in the same city, something like that. But I'd be open to sharing location. And some people are nervous about it, even with their SO. It's like, I don't want someone watching me, but I'm like, at this point, I'm kind of giving up on privacy anyway.
Yeah, I feel safer because I know that if I'm home late and someone kidnapped me, like he would be able to see.
Why are you leaving? Yeah.
On the app, like, uh-oh, that doesn't look right. And hopefully send the police to get me or something.
Yeah. And how old are your kids, Sarah?
They are 6 months and 3.5 years.
Okay. So they don't have iPhones yet.
Bryn sort of does. She has one like without the cell service that she uses to watch Daniel Tiger. Because I don't like to give her my phone.
And your kids, Anne, are a little bit older. Mm-hmm. Like, what are your thoughts on technology and kids? And like, at what point will you give them their own cell phone with internet access and everything?
And my oldest son already has one. I'm very unusual in this respect. My kids are fully tech enabled. I'm like very bullish on it. I think it's great. I think they've had iPads as long as they can remember, probably loaded up with like educational apps and Google Maps and, you know, Star Walk and all sorts of things. Like, it's amazing actually what empowering tools these are for children. And I think that a lot of the there's a lot of panic around screen time. There isn't a ton of research either way. So like, there's more we don't know than more we do know about screen time and the impacts of screen time on children. But what I kind of feel like in my instinct is that as educational tools and exploration tools, they are amazing and magical. And it's so cool. Like, when my son is like asking me questions about Antarctica or something, like, we can open up the map, we can look at it, and we can like explore YouTube videos of it, and we can look at pictures of polar bears and read Wikipedia articles. And that he is so empowered to go out and find information, I think is really cool. And most recently this year, he started to express an interest in talking to our family members who are not nearby. And so we gave him an iPhone set up with iMessage. So he doesn't have a SIM card or anything. He can't make phone calls. But he can text message with his grandmothers and some of our family members. They'd probably love that too, right? And it's super magical. Like, they love it. He takes pictures and sends them pictures, and, you know, he can say goodnight to them and FaceTime with them whenever he wants to. So really, like, allowing him to kind of independently build those relationships with our family members who don't live nearby. And I think that is, for at least people in our generation, it's pretty rare. I feel like people actually live near their families when they start to have kids and start raising their kids. So that's the other thing I think is so important about the technology tools, is like just the telepresence of being able to feel like you have a relationship with your grandmother who is 1,000 miles away, and to be able to talk to her every day. That's pretty magical and important. So, like, hope that this doesn't like backfire on me horribly.
I think this generation, the kids that are honestly growing up with YouTube, and YouTube has, you know, it's not perfect, but it's got a lot of great education on there and other tools out there. I feel like they're going to be so much smarter than us. They're going to grow up, I think, with so much more knowledge and perspective because they grew up with the internet, which is like infinite knowledge and infinite, as long as they're motivated to learn. It's, you know, you just need an internet connection now to learn so much. You don't really need a college degree in some cases to do certain jobs.
Their brains are insane at how they kind of are endlessly soaking up information and how curious they are about everything. So it's like plugging them into the internet, it's like this little like fire hose for their brain of curiosity to get all this information. And I've been watching it firsthand with my kids who are preschoolers and kindergarten, and it is actually pretty remarkable. Like, their brains are built for like absorbing information and learning new concepts, and with the right tools, I mean, you do have to supervise usage and don't just let them loose on the internet, but like with the right tools, and there are great educational programs out there, I think they are potentially going to have a huge impact on children of this generation in their education and their curiosity and their overall abilities.
Yeah. So what's next with Winnie? Anything you would tease? Any features you're working on right now?
We are rolling out our comprehensive childcare discovery product. So you can check it out in the apps or winnie.com/childcare. So in some cities, we have a very comprehensive view of every single licensed daycare and preschool. So over half of these places were not online at all before Winnie. Like, they had no internet presence, no Google listing, no Yelp page. So we're bringing them online. We're getting really detailed information about their prices and schedules and whether they have open spaces. And so we are just continuing to roll that out in as many cities as possible, as quickly as possible, because parents are just dying for this. So that is one big focus for us going forward.
Nice. And where can they find you on the internet? I know you're at SM. You got a two character Twitter handle.
Yeah, except now I'm trying to push my Instagram account. I'm trying to become an Instagram influencer. So S Mosk, SMAUSK on Instagram.
Nice.
I need to get a better handle. And then Winnie on Instagram is just at Winnie, which is really easy.
Nice. What about you, Anne?
I'm at Anne Kate on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, that's good. Keep it consistent. Mine is RR Hoover on everything. Even when new platforms come up, I could get at Ryan, but I want to keep it consistent just because it's easier, you know? I just don't want to have bifurcated usernames.
Yeah.
I actually know a very, very smart person who has a random handle on every service he uses because it makes him harder to track across all those different services. And I was like, that's really smart, actually.
Yeah.
He's not trying to be an Instagram influencer.
No. But if you use the same handle everywhere, then like
someone's going to take RR Hoover on the next big social platform and I'm going to get upset. Don't do that if you're listening. I just planted an idea.
They're going to sell it to you.
They are. They're going to sell it back. Don't do that, please. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for talking.
I'm here with Phil, co-founder and VP of Business Development at Carbon, a GE Ventures portfolio company that's developed a new kind of 3D printing called digital light synthesis. Check out a previous episode to hear Phil tell the story of how The Terminator, that's right, the movie, inspired this technology. I also asked him about how additive manufacturing tech will affect the way we make products and why it's especially helpful for startups.
So when you look at kind of the market, maybe fast forward 5-10 years out from now, how do you see it evolving? How do you see manufacturing in general evolving?
I sort of view it in three main themes. One is with, you know, the rise of digital manufacturing, you're really going to see an increase of release of better products, making things that you couldn't make previously. So things that were six components are now going to be one. And I think the second thing is actually bringing products to market at greater speed. If you think about traditional manufacturing and technologies like injection molding, the lead times are very long. It's not uncommon for things to take, you know, 10 to 12 weeks for you to get an injection molding tool before you get your first part out.
You need to launch and then learn. Same with software. Your first bet probably isn't exactly right, but if you can ship faster, you can learn faster and hopefully build a better product. Is it kind of the same in manufacturing, would you say?
If people like it, you make more of them. If people don't like it, you iterate and you get it back on the market, which is something that traditionally in manufacturing, you cannot do. Additive allows them to bring it to market with very little upfront capital. Third is decentralized production. Today, you know, everything is made in centralized locations and shipped all over the world. What's great about 3D printing and the way I would view it is it's a digital portal for physical objects. It doesn't really matter where they're located. They're going to make products at roughly the same cost. You're going to see new economies grow in places that really haven't seen manufacturing in a long time. I think Adidas is a prime example. Those shoes that they're making are they're actually making in Germany.
What kind of companies and industries are using Carbon and where are you kind of seeing traction and different use cases emerge?
You know, we've been working in the automotive market with folks like BMW and Ford and Aptiv to bring products to market across their vehicles. But also healthcare as well has been huge. And we have well-documented partnerships with Becton Dickinson and J&J, as well as a huge opportunity in dental, which is changing people's lives on a daily basis. And one particular opportunity that we've done there is actually the first ever fully FDA-approved digital denture. Denture production hasn't really changed in 100 years, and we're able to bring to market a more economic solution that more people can afford and lower that barrier to entry on the cost side. Even other places in consumer products, particularly in protective equipment, where we're using latticing structures to provide safety advantages that were unimaginable before across different sports like football, baseball, and lacrosse. We're actually seeing many customers from many verticals show interest in digital manufacturing. As you might be aware of, the manufacturing industry is estimated to be around $12 trillion. We believe that additive, even if it makes up 1% of it, would be, you know, north of $100 billion a year. And there's no reason why it can't be even greater of an opportunity than that. reality is that once customers see the possibilities, especially with the manufacturing partners that we've historically seen, the ability of what's possible outside of just traditional molding, they completely embrace it. You know, they completely embrace the digital manufacturing solution. And it's really has become a powerful tool to not only bring products to market faster, but bring better products to market.
This has been super interesting. Thanks, Phil, for coming in the show, and GE Ventures for making this interview possible. Check out ge.com/ventures to learn more about how they work with startups like Carbon. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.